Then I will check the attendance. So we have Coacher Takesha Jordan here, Kathy Kemp here, Elder Davey Mayer, Elder Julia Matthews, Supervisor Tommy Rylander, and Supervisor Colin Baruchuk. Thank you very much for being here. The floor is yours, Chair.
Thank you, Sarah. So since the quorum is present, we will proceed with the agenda. So the next thing we're going to look at is the approval of minutes from our se September the 15th meeting. Sorry. Anyone like to do a motion for the approval of the minutes?
So moved by Supervisor Rylander.
Right. Oh, sorry. Okay. So moved by Supervisor Rylander and second by Kathy. I thought I saw your hand up, Kathy Kemp. Yep.
Yep,
Second.
second.
Okay. All in favor say aye, and all opposed say no.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right. Alder Mayor, was that just you saying aye? I saw your hand go
Yeah,
up.
it doesn't really work to do eyes in a Zoom, so I was just raising my hand. Thanks.
Yep, that's fine. Well, the motion carries and the minutes are approved. The next on the agenda, we now move to public comment. And we do have someone that registered to speak. And again, as Sarah mentioned earlier in her announcement, that the speaker has 3 minutes to speak. And we also, I just want to ask everyone to make sure that you refrain from interrupting others while they're also speaking. So, I'm sorry, while they're speaking. And Cheryl, Sarah, do you want to go here?
Hello? Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah.
Good. I am the president and CEO of Vegan Haven Central Incorporated. I'm trying to get some things up and going for GAP services. I've been sending emails, but I don't know who's been reading them yet because I think I have to be registered. I'm looking for sponsorship, support. I'm not real well familiar with how to use the processes. I would hope that there is some, I'll say, relief due in the budget for our projects with winter coming. And I just would like to be on an agenda. I'm also a registered lobbyist. I don't know if you would have it to produce anything more today or not.
I'm sorry. You was asking, can we produce any material? I'm just trying to understand your question, but repeat the last part for me, Cheryl. I apologize.
Agenda today. I'm sorry, ma'am. Any more time for me to be on the agenda today?
Unfortunately, it's set. Usually, if you wanted to get on the agenda, and you will have to reach out to I believe, Sarah, I'm sorry. I think it will go to you for, well, no, actually, yeah, you can email us
Right.
and we have time in
And
the
there,
future.
yes, ma'am. And there is a city ordinance that I can bring up agenda items at the beginning of a meeting as a registered lobbyist.
I'm not sure if I'm understanding. You're saying, or can you be on the agenda to talk
Okay.
about some ordinance that you would like?
I just see winter coming and some huge gaps in services, continuing on, in fact, with COVID, and I don't know, budgeting time, I would guess, coming up with deadlines. It's difficult to make use of the shelters as a homeless person. They're crowded, they can often be hostile environments, and the seniors and persons with disabilities are usually the slower movers, and they are the ones that get targeted to be harassed out. So I just had some ideas for a couple of buildings. I sent those in the email, and I'll try to remember to copy that. I'm sorry, I live outside and I'm outside right now. Copy that to the city clerk or whomever it is that that's supposed to go to, along with my emails to the committee.
Okay. If you want to, Cheryl, I think probably just so we can understand and maybe figure out how to best direct some of your concerns. It is some things that we are talking about in certain, different spaces within the community, especially with the new men's shelter opening up. If you don't mind, maybe I think I can get your email if you left it, or either if you can email me, Linda, and perhaps maybe Sarah on the email, and I could try to figure out a way to figure out what's the best, or where is the best, what would be the best space in order to have more conversations
Yeah,
about this.
there's gaps in laundry, storage, being able to cook and store food. And when you see the emails, I'm sure you'll be delighted. If you want mine right now, it is my first initial C, my last name, Elkington, Elkington, the number 900@gmail.com.
Okay. Well, thank you, Cheryl. I definitely will try to figure out what would be some of the best ways that we can get some of your concerns heard. They, sound very.
I understand that budgeting's this time of year. I have not been on top of deadline dates or anything. I just have found that the best I can offer on the top of my head is that the county purchase a building, and I could possibly approach Catholic Charities with some sort of match to bring in the service needs.
That sounds, I hear everything that you're saying, but I want to be remind, mindful of the 3 minute time limit that we have here in this space. Again, one of us will definitely reach out with you and try to figure something out. And I see that, Sarah, you have your hand up.
I appreciate
Yes.
your time and you have a good night.
All right, thank you, Cheryl.
All right, bye-bye.
And Cheryl, if you would like to share anything written, you can email cchic@cityofmadison.com and I can share it
Thank
with the
you. Did
members.
the ones that I sent already come through, or do I have to resend those?
I do not receive, I don't believe that I received anything recently, perhaps previous year.
Only been the last few days, but
Well,
I can
Cheryl.
send them.
Yeah,
Thank you.
thank you. And I forgot about that main email address, Sarah. Thank you. And Cheryl, I'll make sure that to email you and to email you with that email address too as well. So that way you can, have it just to make
Thank
sure.
you.
You're welcome. And we thank you again, Jonathan. Thank you to Cheryl again.
How to get off this thing, you'll have to hang me up.
Oh, I don't. Sarah, she said you may have to hang her. Oh, she did. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't think I had that ability on my end. All right. So, think she was Sarah was listed as the only speaker tonight. The next item that we have is disclosures and recusals. And this is for the conversation that's following after this. So if anybody have any disclosures or any recusals, please, I mean, it's the time to do so now to recuse yourself from the next agenda item. And seeing that I'm hearing that there is none, we will proceed to the next agenda item, which is affordable housing development funds, item number 90442. We're here from City Representatives Matt Frater, Julie Spears, and also County Staff Jenna Woodrich. Hope I said that right. I did. Whoa. Presenters, yeah, so y'all take the floor, and of course, I'm sure we could ask questions afterwards. Do you all rather for us to raise our hand in case a question come up? It's just whatever how.
Yes, thank you, and good evening. Questions at the end would be great. I think Jenna and I have separate presentations, so you can certainly ask at the end of mine, and then any questions from the county at the end of Jenna's. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for having us tonight to talk about this. There's certainly a lot going on with affordable housing funds, and a lot that has happened since we were here last. So I'm very happy to be here to share some of those updates and engage in some conversation. My name is Matt Frater. I'm alone here tonight, so Julie is unfortunately unable to make it. But I am a colleague of Sarah's here in the city's Community Development Division. There, as I said, there's a lot going on, so I'm going to try and go through the city side of affordable housing funding as quickly as I possibly can. Probably won't get into as much detail as is listed on the slides, but the slides will be attached to the agenda and the minutes, so you can go in and review those at a later date if I'm moving too quickly. If you have follow-up questions on anything, please do not hesitate to let me know. So, this might be taking a step too far back, but before we get started, I want to make sure that everyone is sort of on the same page as we start to talk about the housing conversation here in Madison. So, this is a map of the city of Madison and when it was incorporated, by area. We as a city are really incapable of growing outside of our more recent boundary agreements that we've signed with neighboring towns and neighboring municipalities. Most recent that you might be aware of was the town of Madison. There was a lot of news surrounding that as that was incorporated a handful of years ago. But it's something that we plan for. And as we grow, we really need to look at the areas that we have within the city. We plan for this growth. So, as a city, we go through what's called a comprehensive planning process. And we initially projected back in 2018 that we would have over 80,000 new residents by 2040. When we took a look at that again in 2023, we realized that we would have upwards of 100,000 new residents by 2050. And even more recently, in 2024, our updated projections are showing about 115,000 new residents by 2050. And those residents all have to go somewhere. So what you start to see, or you start to see headlines like this across all of the different news media in the city, people breaking even to pay rent every month, students facing expensive rents, even extending to our student population, apartments in Madison being rented more quickly than anywhere else in the nation, year-over-year rent increases that are the highest in the country, our housing crisis being a national extreme, a tale of two cities. Based on who can afford to live here and who can't afford to live here, folks who maybe were born and raised here who can no longer afford to live here. You see articles about why rents are rising so fast and how there isn't really an end to seeing them slowing down. And we all know that rising rents leads to increases in evictions, really becoming a huge issue and seeing a spike across the county. We all also know that homelessness is a housing problem. The way to solve homelessness is by increases to housing, and evictions certainly contribute to increases in homelessness as well. So just want to acknowledge that fact as we talk about our housing programs. So just a little bit of background on our affordable housing funding for those who aren't aware. This is what's called the vacancy rate. So this is our rental vacancy rate. It is the percentage of all rental units, all apartments in the city that are vacant or not under a lease agreement or not rented. Back in, 2008, pre-Great Recession, we were doing pretty okay. We were above 7%, but then the Great Recession hit, and we didn't see as much construction in the city of Madison as we needed to. We've slowly been climbing our way out of that. This next graph on the right is a little bit more confusing, but I think it's important. This shows vacancy rates by tiers of the market. So you can think of the 4 and 5 star as the newer, more expensive units. That's the blue line. The 3 star as units that are a little bit older, like middle of the market. That's the orange line. And then 1 and 2 star as the gray line. Those are the older units, might be new, in need of rehab. And what we see within the market is that units that are older and therefore more inexpensive to rent are the units that have the lowest vacancy rates. So even accounting for quality of housing, people choose affordability, oftentimes by necessity. And so oftentimes folks are living in older housing and housing that's a little bit less expensive in order to get by in the city of Madison. So we acknowledged all of this back when it was happening. We had a housing initiative specialist at the city. And in 2014, 2013, we really started our major, major housing investments, one of those being our affordable housing funding that I'm going to talk to you all about tonight. All of this is also under a city plan that we operate under called the Housing Forward Initiative, which has 4 main goals. So those goals are to, number one, increase housing choice. Number two, create affordable housing throughout the city. Number three, combat displacement and allow people to stay in their homes, or sometimes I like to say, allow people to stay in their neighborhoods. And four, work to end homelessness. So a lot of our housing programs are tailored under these 4 main goals and work to achieve some of those ends. So our affordable housing fund itself is about 12 years old now, created in the 2015 budget, and is used to leverage the small amount of city funding that we have available to us to create new construction to maintain affordability across the city. When I say affordable in this presentation, you can kind of think of it in air quotes. Obviously, affordability means something different to every single person, depending on what they're willing to pay or able to pay. But when I talk about it in terms of this program, it's rental units that are under 60% AMI, income and rent restricted at or under 60% AMI, or for homeownership units at or under 80% AMI. And our affordable housing fund is used for development funding only. It goes out in loans. We focus on, again, gap financing to try and leverage the small amount of city investment that we can to get as many affordable units as we possibly can for that amount of money we're putting into it. So our affordable housing fund has 3 main pieces that I want to talk about tonight that we've been doing a lot of work in over the past year or two. Number one is gap financing. Or additional loans for tax credit developments. That's the low-income housing tax credit operated through the Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority. We have our non-tax credit developments, which we also put out loans for to help support other forms of organizations, other forms of housing that just don't qualify for the additional subsidies through the low-income housing tax credit program. And then homeownership development is another big one that we're invested in as well. So I'm going to talk about those just really quickly in reverse order here. So for homeownership development over the past 2 years since we were here last, these are the things we're focused on. We're focused on funding things like permanent affordability, focusing on some models that fund equity appreciation, allowing home buyers to build equity and wealth in their own homes. Also things like co-housing, lease-to-purchase programs where maybe you're not ready to purchase a home yet, but you can sign a rental agreement with an option to purchase that comes with home buyer education, financial assistance, financial resources. And then some other homeownership initiatives as well, such as mortgage reduction, home repair, and then home buyer education. Just to talk about a little of what we've done in 2024, these are 10 units that were developed for homeownership opportunities for residents under 80% AMI in 2024 alone. You can see there's a huge market for it. All of these are already sold or under contract. LTP in the status there stands for lease to purchase. So those are for folks who are currently renting their homes with the option or opportunity, but not the obligation to buy those homes 2 or 3 years into their tenure. These are some examples of some of the homes that we're building. So these are from the Madison Area Community Land Trust on top. On the bottom, Wisconsin Partnership for Housing Development, and then on the right, an advertisement for a new twin home that is currently still under construction. But you can see some of the prices that we're talking about that city subsidy allows us to sell these homes for. When the average home value in the city of Madison is approaching $500,000, It's not affordable for a lot of people, affordable with or without the air quotes on it. And so we're really targeting prices that are around $235,000, $250,000 when we put affordable housing funds in to build new home ownership opportunities for people. We also help support the city's Community Development Authority in rehabilitation for some of their units. So we've done 32 units so far. It's about $75,000 per unit. As you can imagine, city-owned properties, because they're so reliant on federal money in order to operate those, don't see the amount of reinvestment that we would otherwise like, right? So as a city, the Community Development Division contributes money to help renovate Community Development Authority-owned housing to make sure that it's livable and like a happy, healthy place for tenants to live in. So we're slowly contributing to help that as well. We also constructed six new townhomes over on Teresa Terrace. Top is before and bottom is after. That was a cost of $2 million. These did just open earlier this year. So families are living in there. Wonderful opportunity for folks to come in and have some great, high quality new housing. We provide, relatedly to our homeownership programs, financing for financial literacy, in which in 2024 we had over 400 individuals complete home buyer education courses, of which financial literacy is a component. So making sure that people, even if home ownership's not in their immediate future, have the tools, the skills, the education, the resources and connections necessary to take those next steps toward home ownership if they would like to do so. We do also operate a couple different types of down payment assistance programs to help folks, to assist folks into becoming homeowners. The one that we operate as a city is called Home by the American Dream, which can provide up to $35,000 in down payment assistance to first-time home buyers, as long as they're within our income limits, which again is 80% AMI. So in 2024, we put out 48 loans for first-time home buyers. That was almost $1.7 million of down payment assistance. We also help to fund move-in out homeownership assistance, which can provide up to $75,000 in down payment assistance, as long as someone in the household has at least one member with a permanent disability. They are very inclusive with their definition of disability, just recognizing that there is a range that folks may come in with. But is a super inclusive program, can provide substantial amounts of money to help folks again buy their homes. So there were nine loans in 2024 that went out through this program. And then Habitat home ownership assistance, up to $40,000 towards down payment and closing costs. Again, that's Habitat for Humanity, seven loans in 2024 for about $280,000. The last in the home ownership section is property tax assistance for seniors, for older adults. We know that once you do own a home, and perhaps you have a loss in income or retire or a fixed income because you're on Social Security, it can be really, really expensive to try and maintain your home and pay property taxes on top of that. So we do operate a program for homeowners that are age 65 or older, and again, under certain income limits to help pay real estate taxes. We do about 30 to 32 of those per year for about $200,000 to make sure people can, again, pay their property taxes and maintain and stay in their homes. So, our funding for home ownership goes out every 2 years as a request for proposals process. That just went out earlier this year, in which we made available about $5.35 million to support development and programs and services. And we also made available six lots in the Owl Creek neighborhood through a partnership with our Economic Development Division to allow folks to come in and propose building new home ownership opportunities for lower income households with little to no land costs. Those are going to be sold for a dollar. Have to serve households, like I said, under 80% AMI. And this proposal did close, this request for proposals closed a couple of weeks ago. We had 18 different proposals received for development. It was almost $12 million requested for about $3 million available. Home buyer assistance is about one for one, $2 million-ish available and $2 million requested. And then some other services. About half a million requested and about $350,000 available. So the need is there. Again, with city finances, we don't have a whole lot to go around, but do our best to stretch that. But obviously, with 12 million requests, 3 million available, the demand is there to try and do more. So for our non-tax credit programs and requests for proposals, we fund things like cooperatives, nonprofit developers, for-profit developers, but really focus on missing middle style development, smaller scale development. Those might be things like housing cooperatives or co-ops, which we funded between 7 and 15 units, or apartment style buildings that we funded between 11 and 34 units. One of those that opened in 2024 is Zapata Cooperative, which is, to our knowledge, the first Spanish forward, Spanish language cooperative within the city of Madison. So they took what was this home, formerly in the town of Madison, six car garage, and renovated it to create additional living spaces in what was the attached garages, did high level energy efficiency upgrades to make sure it was affordable for co-op members who were going to live there and not have to pay too much in utilities. And recently opened that as a new 11-member housing cooperative. Similar to our home ownership RFP, we put this funding out and make it available every 2 years. So in our last round in 2024, we had $7.5 million available. We had six applicants apply for funding and four developments that were awarded funds. That totaled 152 units of affordable housing, again, income and rent restricted at 60% AMI or under, through either acquisition, rehab, or construction. So, some of those developments that received funding, I just want to name those. We had a scattered site homeless housing program. We had a renovation and extension of a period of affordability for townhomes that had expiring tax credits on the south side of Madison, so would no longer be affordable, but with city investment is affordable for at least another 40 years. Point on Washington Apartments, and then Red Pine Housing Cooperative. We anticipate the newest RFP to release in spring of 2026. And then our tax credit RFP. So our tax credit RFP is one where we are leveraging other sources of subsidy aside from just city dollars. So that allows us to push for more and also has, I think, probably an outsized impact on what you see in the community. This is where we develop the largest number of units, create the lowest levels of affordability that we possibly can at those 30% AMI units. So again, our tax credit RFP, we have many requirements and preferences, about 20 of each. But some of the highlights are really a focus on those 30% AMI units, which would not be built without city or county investment. We have a preference for permanent affordability, but a requirement of at least 40 years of affordability. We have requirements for partnerships with supportive housing providers and support service coordination, for tenants who are going to be living there. We have tenant selection plan standards to make sure it's easier for people to get into housing who would otherwise be great tenants but might have some prior deficiencies within their rental histories. We have high levels of sustainability requirements for these proposals, universal design for at least 50% of all units are built. We want to make sure this housing is accessible to people no matter their level of ability, either now or throughout the period of affordability. So really, really high requirements for that. And then we really emphasize creative proposals and partnerships through this process. So if you want to see what some of those requirements and preferences are in detail, we do have a RFP web page on CDD's funding opportunities page, and you can click on the RFP guidelines. That'll take you right to all of the requirements and preferences that any proposers have to follow as part of this process. We do also have locational criteria that's associated with this. So the city of Madison has slowly been investing in transit network improvements. We also have our comprehensive plan, which has growth priority areas. And then we have our transit-oriented development zoning overlay to make it easier to build next to high-frequency transit. Those are some of the things that we put together into where we locationally will fund housing. So that results in, amongst other things, in our affordable housing target area map. So the purple areas of our map are where we think are the best locations in the city to put new affordable housing opportunities because they are easy access to amenities and easy access to transportation. But we do have other areas of the city that will allow development in as well. So just to talk about the overarching thing from this program, the overarching results from this program. Like I said, it's been about 12 years now that we've been doing this, and for what we've funded so far is 33 developments that we have provided a small amount of financial loans to, just loans to try and help build these developments. That's created almost 2,800 new units of housing, with almost 2,300 of those being affordable, income and rent restricted at or under 60% AMI. Almost 600 of those have been supportive housing units, so do have support services attached to them. And that results in almost $750 million of construction activity, which is just a huge number, $757 million of new construction for affordable housing that would not exist without city and county, shout out to county, investments in some of these developments. Just looking at some that have opened really briefly in 2024, we had Avenue Square Apartments, which was completed in September of 2024, that had 70 income and rent restricted units under 60% AMI. We had Bayview Townhomes, which has been a multi-phase, multi-year development, finally completed in fall 2024, which has 120 of 130 units that are income and rent restricted under 60% AMI. Rise Madison, on East Washington, which has 161 units out of 245 that are affordable housing opportunities for folks. And then Yellowstone Apartments, which opened actually just recently in October here, with 54 of 65 units being affordable under 60% AMI. I've said that number a lot, so I apologize. I do just want to take a second to talk about just a few emerging challenges. So one of the things that we've seen is obviously construction prices are increasing, right? If you talk to folks in the regional housing strategy or folks who build housing, they'll tell you that there's a labor shortage in housing. That's gotten more extreme over the past year. So I just want to acknowledge that. So even though we are investing in affordable housing, the cost of affordable housing, what it takes to build it, keeps increasing and increasing and increasing. There was an estimate back in April that just with some of the questions around immigration status, especially in the construction workforce, that alone could cause upwards of an 18% increase in construction costs for housing. And what we've also seen is more recently tariffs and how those are impacting the cost of construction for even affordable housing. So this is a graphic, again, from the New York Times from earlier this month. Just looking at kitchens and things that go into making sure that all of these are high quality units and the price increases that some of our developer partners, and then by extension, a little bit us, are going to have to try and overcome to make sure we're continuing to build these high quality housing opportunities for people. Finally, I said a couple of times that the city leverages other investments in order to get these developments built. So I just want to acknowledge that because these other subsidies are actually substantially large. So when we look back at, what is this, 11 years of the program, 2013 to 2023, that we had data readily available for things that had already been constructed, this is a pie chart of of where the financing for those come on a per unit basis. On the right, the bar graph shows the overall construction cost on a per unit basis. So you can see from when we started this program in 2013 up through 2023, the cost of one new apartment has more than doubled, just to build the building. So costs of construction have more than doubled over that time frame. But on a city investment basis, we contribute about 10% of the overall cost to ensure that these get built, again, because they wouldn't be able to get built otherwise. When you put that on a dollar for dollar basis, tax credit equity, those are tax credits that are awarded by the Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority, pay for about half the costs of affordable construction. They can take on private debt that pays for about another 40 cents on the dollar. Our affordable housing fund contributes about 8 cents on the dollar, and then on average, tax increment financing, which is another financial tool the city has to support housing development, pays for about 2 cents on the dollar. We do also have an annual RFP for this. So we made 10 million available this year, came out in summer of 2025, that request for proposals. We had 8 applicants apply for funding, 2 ultimately chose to withdraw. But in total, between the 6 remaining, $17.7 million in funding requested, and the remaining proposals would aim to create about 750 new units of housing, with almost 500 of those being affordable, and up to 132 being again for our lowest income residents at 30% AMI that have supportive services attached to them. We are still finalizing those awards, so this is just developers that have sent in a proposal. We don't have updates on this year's cycle yet. But again, it is an annual RFP that is released every summer. So finally, you might ask, where do I go to get updates about this? Where do I go to see what the city is doing? I have said in this meeting that we have lofty goals for what we want to do as a city, and that's true. So as a city, we have partnered with the county to come up with targets for how much housing we need to build. Remember that graph I showed at the beginning that talked about vacancy rate? Part of the reason rents are rising so high, that evictions are higher, is because we just don't have enough housing in the city. So we have committed to trying to build 15,000 new units of housing by 2030. And because we don't just need new housing, we need new affordable housing, we've committed to try and make 25% of those affordable, income and rent restricted at 60% AMI or under. It is a lofty and ambitious goal, but I can assure you we are doing everything that we possibly can to try and hit that. So, if you're curious about where to find more information on developments as they happen, we update this monthly. So, this is on the Community Development Division's website. This is the City of Madison Housing Tracker. It tells you how many units are currently under construction. As of this month, it's over 5,000. And it tells you how many new homes we've completed this year, which, again, as of this month, is almost 1,700. We also focus in on affordable housing. Like I said, we want 25% or one out of every four new apartments to be income and rent restricted, affordable, so that they're reserved permanently or long term for people and households with lower incomes. So if you want to see where those are being built, we also have a page on the housing tracker so you can view that. On the bottom left, it looks at what we've done by t since 2015. We've only done 11% that are income and rent restricted at or under 60% AMI. So when I had that slide up that was talking about, 33 developments, 2,800 new units of housing, that's only 11% of what we've done since 2015. So again, acknowledging we have a long way to go, but as a city, we are committed to getting there. So that is what we have been doing with our Affordable Housing Fund and our update. I will pause to see if there are questions.
Alder Mayor, you can go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Matt, thank you for the presentation. You mentioned that you aim for a 40-year term on some of these programs, which I think is great. In the past, there's been a lot lower term. Have you had any pushback or concern from developers about that term?
Yes. So
Yeah.
one of the things I'll say is we have, like I said, we have like 20, I think it's 23 requirements in our RFP. We don't create our RFPs and our requirements in a silo, right? We don't sit in a room, or we don't meet with alders and other committees and just like say, hey, we want to do this. Here's what we're hearing. We go out and we meet with community. We look at data, we talk about what the needs are. And so anytime we change something like that, we do receive some pushback from developers of questions, because ultimately it makes these deals more complicated, right? Complications make it less sure that it'll move forward. Sometimes our requirements even put forward the need for more city funding to make sure that they actually get built. But it's something that we've committed to. So 40 years, when we increase that from WEDA, the Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority's 30 years, yes, we received pushback on that. We received pushback on our tenant selection plan standards to try and make housing more accessible for applicants. I think there's a natural tendency for people to be concerned about change and the risks associated with that. But we've been really lucky to have other funding partners who have committed to those changes also. I'm looking at you, Jenna. Which makes it easier for us to try and ask those things, because again, they can't move forward with the in most cases.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I'm wary of any, anything that makes it more difficult to build housing, but it's absolutely essential that we put longer terms to make this a real commitment to long-term affordability, because otherwise we're building it and then it's coming off the rolls within a couple decades. So thank you for that.
I got a question myself. When you were talking about sustainability, sustainable designs and creative proposals, I know you mentioned the tariffs, which is bad because I know that is going to, play a role moving forward because of how high they are. But I've always been an advocate about making sure the developers have something in there about noise reduction in apartments, because I feel like a lot of the places that are getting built, it's like, and it's weird because the new one that's going up now, East Wash, I know some people that's moving in there, which is weird because like the one bedroom's on lower floors, and then you put, four or five, kids on top of, so basically just always wondering about when they getting when y'all are looking at the proposals, are they being creative about, the materials that they're using for the walls in addition to the floors to make sure that it, because I think that also attributes on, a lot of people coming in and out or being, evicted and stuff because neighbors, get into it and things like that, and all that plays a role. So I just want to make sure that's being, thought about or.
Chair, that's such a good question. It is. But what I want to talk about is just spheres of control. So, as a city, we cannot require, and this is just the city broadly, we cannot require anything more strict than the state building code. So, if a developer comes to the city and they don't need City of Madison financing to get their deal done, they don't have to take those things into consideration, the noise mitigation. So that's the wide sphere where we don't have a whole lot of control over what you're talking about. But once the city starts putting dollars into the deal and has financing for these developers, that moves us entire. So we do have requirements around noise attenuation, especially in areas that are near, I almost said proximate to, but that makes no sense, near the Dane County Regional Airport for F-35 noise. So, on our affordable housing fund target area map that I showed, we have what's called a limited eligibility area where we will consider funding your proposal if you do significant noise attenuation to make sure that you're not just not hearing your neighbors, but not bothered as bothered by the airplane noise, the street noise, other things like that as well. So, that's by the Dane County Airport. That's by major roadways, so the interstate and the Beltline, any proposals that would come in near there would have to attenuate to at or below 65 decibels at peak to make sure that it's a healthy living environment for folks.
Thanks. Okay. Well, I'm not seeing any more questions or hands up, so thank you, Matt.
Thank you for the time, everyone. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Matt.
Great. And the next presentation we have is Jenna.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me tonight. My name is Jenna Wetheridge. I'm the lead housing program specialist in Dane County's Department of Human Services, Division of Housing Access and Affordability. It's a mouthful. I'm primarily working on the county's capital projects. And let's see. I am going to talk about the Dane County Affordable Housing Development Fund. When Dane County talks about our Affordable Housing Development Fund, we are primarily talking about our investment in multifamily housing. Primarily, also historically, has been through the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit program. But I just did just want to share some of the other things the county is doing with their capital dollars. In addition to the Affordable Housing Development Fund, both LIHTC and non-LIHTC, we've also invested in what we call the Fair Chance Housing Fund. That is dollars dedicated to housing for folks that have at least one member that has been involved in the justice system. And excitingly enough, the first project just opened this past weekend, which was four units for women and children, four units of two bedrooms over on the west side. There also was an investment in farm worker housing. We're currently partnering with Nina Collective right now, who is doing an assessment on what the barriers and needs, housing needs are for agricultural workers, and then helping to identify potential solutions that we could use our capital dollars for. In addition to those projects, the county has also made an investment in Habitat for Humanity in Dane County and the Madison Area Community Land Trust, both of which to build affordable home ownership housing. In addition to just those capital dollars, the county also, similar to the city of Madison, has a community development block grant and home investment partnership program. So federal dollars that we receive, and colleagues of mine in the Division of Housing Access and Affordability administer programs related to home ownership assistance, home buyer counseling, owner-occupied rehab, and some tenant-based rental assistance. But tonight I'm primarily going to talk about the Affordable Housing Development Fund. New in 2008 was what we're very creatively calling our non-LIHTC fund. So this was $8 million in the budget to expand the investment in broader types of projects that are not using low-income housing tax credits, with the one exception being a project that has tax credits that are going to expire. And then we could invest in a project like that to maintain the affordability of those units. Eligible types of projects for this fund are acquisition and rehab of existing multifamily housing, new construction of multifamily housing, rehab of existing housing that needs investments to address housing quality, code, and accessibility issues, or make energy improvements. Some of the baseline requirements for this fund are that projects commit to a 40-year period of affordability. They follow what we call the Dane County Tenancy Addendum. So this is an addendum that gets attached to all leases in a unit or in a project that limits things like the security deposits that can be charged, late fees, set some parameters around when, but what non-renewal notices can look like, and then reasonable guest rules, and even limits on like how parking, towing of cars from parking lots can look. All projects have to follow all of the Dane County Fair Tenant Selection criteria. Matt talked a little bit about their tenant selection plan standards. For Dane County, we have sort of a list of criteria that look at mitigating factors that the property management company has to take into consideration if a household owes money to a previous landlord. Limits on minimum income requirements, what can be taken into account if they're looking at a credit report, and look back periods for criminal convictions. So all projects under this fund will have to agree to all of our fair tenant selection criteria. And they will also need to include a minimum of 4 units of affordable housing at the 60% area median income level. And the county funds that get invested in a project like this would be limited to supporting those 60% or below units. Applications for this funding, so this is our first year of having it. Applications were due in September, so they're currently under review. So at this time, that's about what I can share for this program, but look for updates on this one in the future. The bulk of the county's Affordable Housing Development Fund historically has been through what we call the Affordable Housing Development Fund, now referring to the Low Income Housing Tax Credit Program. This is annual funding that also comes from the Dane County Capital Budget. The annual award, so when this program started in 2015, it started with an investment of $1.75 million and has gone all the way up to $20 million. In 2025, our capital allocation was $20 million. We award these dollars on a competitive basis via an application process. And similar to what Matt was saying, these funds are typically one small piece of a larger funding package, including the tax credit, equity investment, federal home loan banks, TIF, or other local resources. The fund was established in 2015, and an emphasis has been on the creation of new affordable rental housing units, either through construction or adaptive reuse. In 2025, we added a priority, though, to emphasize that we want to keep units that have been affordable through the tax credit program and maybe expiring, that we would prioritize funding those so that those units can stay in the market as affordable housing. A base requirement of the fund now is that a minimum of 20% of the units in a project applying for funding must be affordable for households with incomes at or below 30% county median income. In 2025, all projects have to agree to incorporate the tenant protections in the tenancy addendum. So, what I referred to earlier, the limits on security deposits, limits on late fees, and they also must target a minimum of 20% of the units for households experiencing homelessness. In 2025, we added a requirement that the minimum period of affordability be 40 years. So that puts us in line with what the city is requiring. They have to agree to all fair tenant selection criteria. Previously, it was sort of a list, and developers could choose what they would incorporate into their tenant selection plans. And the more they incorporated, the higher they scored. This year, they have to agree to all of them. And we also set some base funding for supportive services to 2,000 per unit per targeted unit. So if we're saying 20% of the units have to be targeted to folks experiencing homelessness, we're looking for a minimum investment in supportive services of $2,000 per unit. In order to administer these funds, we partner with the Dane County Housing Authority. The Dane County grants the funds to the Dane County Housing Authority, and we secure the requirements through a three-party agreement between Dane County, DCHA, and the developer. And then DCHA loans the funds to the project owner. The terms of the loan run through the affordability of the projects. Our annual funding cycle, we usually put our RFP out in late spring or summer. They're reviewed by a county staff team that consists of representatives from the Housing Access and Affordability Division, the Dane County Controller's Office, the Office of Equity and Inclusion, and Planning and Development. And then the annual awards are affirmed by the Dane County Board in the fall. And then we also individually route the agreements as they are completed. Historically, the fund through 2025, which includes our 2025 staff team recommendations, which are just being introduced at the county board this week. But through 2025, Dane County has invested $56 million in the Affordability Development Fund. About just over $30 million has been spent inside the city of Madison and about $25 million outside the city. It's supported the creation of close to 3,200 units, and of those, just over 2,900 are what we consider affordable. In this table, when we're talking about affordable units, we're going up to 80% county median income. But I just have an additional breakdown now for going back to 2019 about how that splits from 30, 50, 60, and 80. So while that previous number went up to 80, since 2019, we've supported the creation of 472 30% units and over 1,000 50% units. And so that roughly accounts for 65% of all the affordable units are at that 50% or below number. And then the cost for each of those units is approximately $40,000, $44,000 for that 50% and below. I'd like to share a little bit about the history of the fund. It's not a static fund. It was created in 2015, and it has evolved over time, especially when we look at trying to make sure that tenants in the units are protected, that the units that are created are accessible to folks. We have added the tenancy addendum. In 2021, we set sort of a minimum. It used to be all or nothing for those fair tenant selection criteria. We set a minimum number that developments had to incorporate that we've pushed over time until this most recent year, where we said all of them had to be incorporated. 2023, we added the requirement that 20% of the units be affordable at that 30% CMI. 2024, we mandated that tenancy addendum for all projects. And again, in 2025, what I said earlier, all fair tenant selection have to be included. 20% of the units have to be targeted for households experiencing homelessness, and supportive services have to be funded at a minimum of 2,000 per targeted unit, with the ability to score higher on the proposal if that investment increases up to $5,000. As we talk about these requirements and how things have changed, you might wonder, like, how do I know if a project received Dane County funding? We maintain a map on our website. So it's dcdhs.com/HA. So that's for housing access and affordability, /HD for housing development. If you go to that page, there'll be a map that's going to map all of our projects that we've invested in. And we add projects on there as we've completed their grant agreement. So once we know they're moving forward, the agreement's been approved by the county board, in the following quarter, they'll be added to this map. If you click on any one of these bullet points, it's going to pull up a project profile that will show you the number of units in the project, the source of the funding, the development company, and what that unit mix is. If it's one bedrooms, two bedrooms, three bedrooms, we've tried to make it useful for folks that might be trying to find some housing that would work for them. And then as the requirements changed over time, we also want to make sure that people know what requirements apply to a certain project and have a way to let us know if they have concerns. So we have what we call the Dane County Protections page. If you go here, it's going to give you an email address you can reach out to and a phone number folks can call if they have any concerns. And then you can either link from that previous map I showed you. Any of those projects are going to include a link directly to the project's protections page, or you can click on either City of Madison or Dane County Communities. And then once you do that, it is going to give you a list of all the projects we've funded, and then a hyperlink that will take you to what we call the project's profile. On the profile, you'll be able to find the year that we invested, the source of the funding we invested in it. You can read the project proposal. You can read the project's contract. We thought about, we don't want to make people have to look through the contract to find the information that might be most helpful for them. So we pulled out whether or not the tenancy addendum applies. If it does, you can link right to what the tenancy addendum would look like in that particular year. And then which of those fair tenant selection criteria apply to a project. So you can see, like, if it's okay, this one shouldn't deny anyone for lack of housing history. If you feel like that is not being followed, you can reach out to that compliance email or phone number to let us know, and somebody on staff will follow up with you. And so I always like to highlight that because it's not just important that we build the units or that we have these requirements in there. We really want to make sure that the projects are following through on their commitments when they received the state and county funding. And so with that, I am ready to answer any questions.
I definitely have one. Sorry, okay. Anybody else want to go before I go? I would, because I am chairing, so I can wait and let others go. And I'm seeing none. Don't look like I am seeing others. Well, my question is with this project protection page. First of all, I didn't know that this existed. Second of all, how can folks that, you know, is this something that the property managers give out, at least sign, like, you know, just to say hey? Yeah. Or how can people know more about this?
That it exists. Sure. So it is, gosh, I wish I could remember what year we added it. We added it within the last couple of years. So it is actually required under county ordinance. So any project receiving dollars either through the Affordable Housing Development Fund or CDBG or any of the other county dollars has to actually have a sign posted And so that's in the grant agreement, and there has to be a sign in a conspicuous area in the building that gives our number, the email address, the source of the funding. So pretty much everything on that profile, with the exception of they don't link to their contract or their proposal. It's actually why we tried to come up with a relatively short URL that could fit on a sign for folks to make it as useful as possible for folks to find us.
Okay, and I got two more questions. In these properties, do you all often have someone to go and check to make sure that it's posted so people can see it? And then the other question I have is, what's the average number of reports you receive or that you all may get from, it don't have to be just one property, but just period. Is people really seeing this and responding or, reaching out to you all is what I'm trying to get at.
So we do monitor projects. So it is on when we monitor, it is on the list of things that we look for. So did they have a grant agreement that required the sign? Do we see the sign there? And we are involved during sort of the lease up process for a project. So we'll be putting stuff into place to remind developers and property managers of this commitment to make sure the signs are posted. And we do hear from folks. I'm just gonna take a quick look. We didn't start, I didn't start formally tracking the inquiries until this spring. But let's see. So since April of this year, we've heard from at least 15 folks, either through the email or the phone number. I will say it's a mix. Sometimes it is about a specific project. Sometimes folks are just looking for general housing help and support, and they find the email address and reach out to us.
Okay, thank you.
But you're exactly right. That's one of the reasons why I always try to end the presentation with information about the website to help get the word out that it exists.
Yep, I heard you. I'm sorry, my son was yelling in the back. So sorry, but I heard you. I'm sorry if y'all heard that too. It was okay. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for this presentation. Thank you, both of you guys. I think I learned a little more something else that I didn't know about this whole process today. Some things I feel like I knew, and some things I feel like knew was new to me. Well, if that's it, no other questions, we can move on to the next. Oh, sorry, Alder Mayor got his hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to ask, Staffer Lim, could you attach these presentations to the Legistar or otherwise share them with the rest of the committee?
Yes, we'll do
Great.
that.
Thank you very much.
Jenna, could you stop sharing the screen? Thank you.
Sarah, you might have to stop it. I think, I don't know if we could do
I
that, can
cannot
we?
figure it out. Jenna, would you be able to stop sharing your?
Oh, thank
Yeah, I'm
you.
trying to figure out how to get it. Always looks a little different.
I did it.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, okay, thanks. Okay, well, thank you again. So next we'll hear the staff report. And which is, sorry, item number 90441. I don't know if I should have said that prior, but I'm gonna say it. So.
I'll be quick. I know the supervisors, you have a budget meeting starting at 7. So, as usual, shelter utilization update, porch light, men's shelter had 332 guests last night. Salvation Army woman shelter 102, family shelter 21 families with 59 families on the wait list. YWCA Family Shelter, 8 families, and Healing House, 3 families. I also want to add the dairy drive. You had that, the resolution last time at this meeting. The dairy drive was closed. The residents and staff were able to move out by the specified date. The engineering team is currently working on the cleanup. Dairy Drive staff is still working with the residents there. They have contracts through end of this month to provide supportive services, still working on housing opportunities for those who haven't able to find housing. There are still several unsheltered folks that they're working with on trying to help.
Thank you for that, Sarah. I think Christina, you
Here,
hear her?
I'll go real quick too. There aren't a whole lot of updates. Just some resolutions routing, and this will go in with the minutes so that you can have them. Trying to accept funds from HUD for CDBG, but that is pending because the government has been closed. And also authorizing receipt of funds from the City of Madison to contribute operations for the Beacon. Those are the two big ones. The American Rescue Plan funds are done. The programs are done as of the end of September. So county staff is finishing up the required reporting for Department of Treasury. Others, of course, supervisors are going to have a budget meeting here soon that called for notable 4% deduction in purchase of service or POS contracts. That's going through committees and need to go through the board yet. County staff are working really hard on revising the 2026 contracts right now. It's been very, very busy meeting with providers, and we'll get those final contracts hopefully done in November. I don't have any more details about the RFP that went out for shelter and if those negotiations have been finalized. I'm sorry, I don't have an update on that. But all of our staff is listed here. We do have a new staff member named Patrick. So Patrick Duffy. So if you start to see his name around, he's now a member of our team. And that's all I have.
All right, thank you, Christina and Sarah, for the updates. Do any questions for them? All right. Seeing that there are none, and it seems like no further business. I'd like to do have someone to move for adjournment.
I move
So
to
moved.
adjourn.
I didn't hear who said that. Who said so moved? Oh, Supervisor Rylander? Was that you? Okay, Supervisor, okay, thank you. And I heard that Alder Matthews, and you second, right? All in favor, say aye.
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 All right, thank
Aye.
you. And it sounds like meeting is adjourned. I mean, well, we have all the ayes, and the meeting is adjourned at approximately 6:56 p.m. Thank you, everyone. And I know some of y'all have a long night ahead.